From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Monday morning news about a tweet by President Trump is not unusual. This Monday morning's news, though, about a tweet is prompting a spectrum of reaction, from concerns about war all the way to the posting of hilarious memes. So we're going to start there in my weekly conversation with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, Beth. I don't think anything is hilarious anymore, but let's hear it.
Yeah, I know. I hesitated about that, but the memes and the lightness of it, I think, helps emphasize that these tweets, even when as serious as the possibility of war with Iran, get such a broad reaction of, do we take it seriously? Do we not? Anyway, let me back up. At this point, it is an intense exchange of words, and it doesn't seem to be more than that, correct?
Well, who knows? I mean, we did see something similar between the president and Kim Jong-un in North Korea probably less than a year ago when they were talking. But basically, we were talking about my bombs are bigger than your bombs and I have a bigger button than your button. And we're going to there was casual talk about World War III. And then they had a summit and everybody was they were best friends and everything went fine. So who knows? There's so many different interpretations of what's going on in the battle between President Rouhani of Iran and what President Trump has responded to, including the fact that perhaps the president, who is notoriously known for changing the subject, may want to change the subject because Paul Manafort's going on trial this week, because there's still bad reaction to his behavior and his conduct in Helsinki last week. I can't believe that was only last week.
Right.
So we don't know what's real and what's not, but again, we're seeing a president on Twitter writing in capital letters that, you know, you mess with the U.S., it's World War III. And then in the next breath, we're talking about President Trump getting nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. So once again, I guess I can see why the memes are so amusing, because it's so surreal at the same time.
This unfolded for the most part on Sunday. The Iranian president warned President Trump not to escalate tensions with Iran, essentially saying that a confrontation with Iran would be the mother of all wars, but peace with Iran would be the mother of all peace. And then following up, I'll add to that, the Iranian president also said, do not play with the lion's tail or you will regret it. Then there was a speech by Mike Pompeo, who told a crowd, interestingly enough, of a number of Iranian Americans at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, that the U.S. under President Trump will not stay silent. And he added that the level of corruption and wealth among Iranian leaders shows that Iran is run by something that resembles the mafia more than a government. Then came President Trump's tweet, which was in all caps, strongly worded. And I think it's left people thinking today, what does this mean next? And who knows, Ken, could we be headed for some Iranian summit at some point?
Well, look, there's no, I mean, you know something, we're not paid to have to predict what could happen. And we've known for watching this president the last 18 months that it's almost a fool's errand to try to predict anything he'll do. But as I said, this sounds very similar to what happened with North Korea, how we were talking about World War III and then they had this summit. So maybe that is the case, or maybe it's a distraction, or maybe Trump woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I'm only saying all this because there's no prediction. There's no, you know, you talked. I mean, we saw Dan Coats' reaction last week when he learned about that the United States has invited President Putin to come here for a summit in the fall. And this is the director of national intelligence, and he had no knowledge of this. If you ask the State Department what Putin and Trump spoke about it in Helsinki, they have no idea. So there's no way of predicting anything, because we just don't get the kind of information we would get in any other scenario, any other president.
We do have that sound, Ken. You referred to Dan Coats. He was actually talking with NBC's Andrea Mitchell on stage at an event when she broke the news to him. So here goes. Let's listen.
We have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again.
You, Vladimir Putin coming.
Did I hear
the,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
Obviously, Ken, it was a live situation. He had no idea. He did spend a good part of the weekend walking back his reaction and his comments, but it was quite a moment.
Well, he was walking it back because the White House, or some people in the White House, was saying, spreading the word that Dan Coats had gone rogue, that he was not being loyal to the president. But, I mean, you know, how do you hide disbelief when you're the director of Central of National Intelligence and you hear from Andrea Mitchell, of all people, that Vladimir Putin is invited to the U.S.? And this is the problem with the administration from the beginning, because in many ways, President Trump is his own Secretary of State, his own National Security Advisor, his own Director of National Intelligence. And when that happens, you have people who were respected, like Dan Coats, a former U.S. senator from Indiana and not part of a Trump conspiracy. He's clearly part of the establishment, but he's somebody who's well-respected. And when he gets blindsided by this, boy, you sure heard it live and, you know, in person. And that's why you have to not only listen to that audio, but the video is pretty interesting, because you can see he's just completely taken by surprise.
Which makes you think there wasn't even a casual conversation in the White House with the president about, well, maybe we can get him to come here this fall, or I threw out the idea. You have to believe there was nothing like that.
Absolutely. I don't think he was part of the conversation at all.
So you also mentioned the fact that Paul Manafort heads to trial this week, and that transitions us into the broader investigation still being conducted by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. It's not been easy or necessarily top of page one to track where the investigation is. So let's catch up on that moment. It's significant that Manafort and his trial will begin now.
Well, the reason I sound like a little hesitant in this, because I'm not exactly sure what the Manafort trial means. Yes, he was briefly in 2016 President Trump's campaign manager. Yes, he's involved, or at least accused of kind of relationships with Russians. But I don't know if this is really involved. This really involves President Trump and the 2016 campaign and the charges of collusion that President Trump disavows on an hourly basis. Or this is more about Manafort's own lobbying activities. And I mean, he's on. You know, he was indicted for bank fraud and tax evasion. And so I don't really know what it means, and especially the fact that he, among everybody else who's been charged by Robert Mueller, he's the one who has pled not guilty. He's been defiant from the beginning. He has not said a word. And I don't know if, I mean, who knows if there's some kind of a relationship or some kind of a winking between Manafort and the president, that if Manafort is found guilty of this, that maybe he could be pardoned or his sentence could be commuted. But it's very interesting to watch. You know that the president is watching this very carefully, because there are other things going on at the same time, as we've learned with Carter Page, and whether he has been fairly listed as an agent of Russia, which is almost remarkable to hear. What's going on with Michael Cohen and the money to the former playmate who allegedly had an affair with the president. So there's a lot of things on President Trump's mind, not only Helsinki, and Manafort's trial, which starts Wednesday, is certainly among them.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Let's go back through that list that you just, even if we touch them in bullet points. The trial that begins Wednesday will in fact be the first trial prosecuted by Special Counsel Robert Mueller in this series of investigations. So then let's move to Carter Page. And the FBI released more than 400 pages of files about Carter Page. I don't know what was learned from them. And Carter Page, unlike Manafort, is fully denying all the charges against him. Do you want to put that into more perspective, Ken?
Well, when President Trump talks about the witch hunt or about the illegal activities of the Department of Justice and the FBI, he's mostly talking about Carter Page, a former aide to the campaign, a former foreign policy aide who had been being watched by the FBI since 2013 when he basically was in contact with some people, Russians connected to the Kremlin. He has called himself, Carter Page has self-described himself, that's great English, has called himself basically an informal advisor to the Kremlin. And there are some people in the FBI who said, wait a second, this is somebody who should be watched by intelligence. So when Trump says the Obama people are monitoring and illegally surveillancing his campaign, it's really all about Carter Page and what connections he may have had with Russia. So that is a serious thing. The FBI thinks it's real. The Democrats in Congress think it's real. The Republican argument is basically to monitor what Trump is saying, and this is overreach by the FBI and the Department of Justice because it's part of the crooked Hillary Clinton / crooked Barack Obama administration out to get Trump, whereas the FBI is convinced that Carter Page could very well be an agent of Russia and deserves that surveillance.
One more name you mentioned, Michael Cohen, who says now that there is an audio tape.
Well, you know something, I mean, the thing about this, and Donald Trump is so outraged that his own attorney would audio tape his conversations. Donald Trump himself has a reputation for years of taping phone calls with other people without their knowledge. But apparently Cohen, who has done a lot of that kind of recording, taped a conversation with Trump prior to the election of 2016, around September, and this regarded basically what the National Enquirer would do a lot. They would pay these women who alleged to have an affair with Donald Trump. They would buy their story and then they would kill it. They would never publish it because the head of the National Enquirer, the American Media Incorporated, is a Trump ally. So this conversation between Michael Cohen and Donald Trump was basically what to do about this woman. Should we have, maybe instead of having the National Enquirer paying her off, maybe we should have paid her off. But allegedly that's what the conversation is about. Again, once the moment that Michael Cohen's offices were raided by the FBI, or once the moment that Michael Cohen indicated that he might talk, you know that somebody who's such a fixer like Michael Cohen, you know that he knows a lot of stuff. He knows where the bodies are buried. And that's something as much as, if not more than the Manafort trial, this is something that's really, really concerning the president and his allies.
Michael Avenatti is saying that there is a wealth of recordings there. And in the scheme of all of this that we're talking about, you just alluded to it a moment ago, how powerful or significant or compelling is the idea of these audio tapes to you in terms of this presidency, Ken?
Well, see, that is the unknown question. And I smiled at that question. I'm glad you asked that, Beth, because as you asked that, the first thing I thought of was last Monday when we're seeing that surreal scene in Helsinki when it seems clear that President Trump is siding with Putin rather than his own intelligence agencies. And while he walked back those words, a few of the words, the next day, I thought this was a major damage. But I've seen polls in the last couple of days by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News and the Washington Post and ABC News that basically shows that 88% of Republicans are sticking with the president. An overwhelming majority of the Republicans support what the president did in Helsinki. They support better relationships with Russia, the Republican Party of all parties to support better relationships with the Kremlin. And so that whenever I think that, wow, this is really something, this is something that could really endanger the presidency, the president seems to weather it fine. I don't know if it's because of his abilities or the public's short attention span or the fact that the Republicans are staying with him no matter what. But either way, when I think something is major, like Carter Page, like Michael Cohen, like Paul Manafort, like Helsinki, ultimately not much changes. So for all the Democrats who are looking at November 6th and saying, boy, we can't wait for that day because this is the day that the American people are going to stand up and vote out all these Republicans, I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, because I don't know what the American people are feeling. I know what they're saying in Washington. I know what they're saying in the socialist republics of California and New York. I'm kidding, of course. But yeah. I don't. But the rest of the country, I think they're split on Trump. And so, you know, I look at the Michael Cohen thing and say, oh, my goodness, what could this be? But we've seen what could this be events in the past. And somehow President Trump is still President Trump.
You've been exploring that question. Others are too. The New York Times Daily podcast last week, Thursday, I think it was devoted to why controversies aren't more consequential for this president. And I think it's a question that's going to continue to be explored leading up to the November election. There's, of course, the issue of the Supreme Court picks, and this is a powerful presidency because of already two seats and potentially more. And I don't know how that factors in here, but I think it has to be noted.
Well, it does. And whatever you think about President Trump and whatever you think, whatever culpability or not he has with ethics issues, the fact that he is president, and when there's an opening on the Supreme Court, as there is now with Anthony Kennedy's retirement, you have the likelihood, I still think the likelihood, that the president will get a second pick. We had Neil Gorsuch last year. We're likely to get Brett Kavanaugh this year. I know there are some Republicans who are not convinced, you know, they're not sure. Now Rand Paul is saying, well, I really don't know. But Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, does that a lot. He says, gee, I may vote against the president, and ultimately he doesn't. But assuming that Kavanaugh is confirmed to the court, that does move the court to the right, because Anthony Kennedy is that swing vote. There's nothing swing about Brett Kavanaugh. He's very conservative. And as you alluded, Beth, I mean, the possibility of a third opening, whether it's Stephen Breyer or Ruth Bader Ginsburg or anybody who's a liberal and getting up there in age, and if a liberal leaves the court and is replaced by a Trump nominee, that is a sea change for the court. And whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, I mean, that could certainly change the court to the more right-wing direction for decades to come.
Decisions for decades. Okay, Ken, we never know what's coming in the week ahead, but I know we'll talk to you next week about it. So thanks for joining us today.
And you know what we're going to say next week? We're going to say, did all this stuff just happen in another week? That's what's so amazing about this. What we just talked about happened in the last week.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, Beth.
You're right. When you said Helsinki, that feels like a month ago right now. So.
Yeah, right.
All right, Ken, take care. Have a good summer.
Thanks,
week
Beth.
Ahead. That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. He is heard on public radio stations across the country, and you can find a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio.